Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. On this Valentine's Day 2022, NBC Universal's Winter Olympics presentation is Breaking Bad with viewers. Can this break be healed? Mark Berman from the Programming Insider joins me next. Bel-Air is winning critical and public love a day after this fresh take on NBC's iconic comedy with Will Smith launched on Peacock. Here, executive producers and co-showrunners T.J. Brady and Rashid Newsom next in an internet radio exclusive live from the set. That's our next half hour. Also ahead, a hockey com comes to Hulu and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone, on this Valentine's Day. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio, presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Verbal Reason, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Music. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you commercial-free today by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. This is audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. Wherever you are on this D-Day, welcome to the program all about TV's current and future. We got a big one for you. That's why we're going to be commercial-free. We will have one commercial break, quarter past the hour, and another promotional break, quarter to the hour, so we can get your phone calls and your chat room activity in. So get on the phone, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway, you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. And get into our chat room as well. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Don't forget, while the program is on the air, you can connect others to what we're doing by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you and us. 24 degrees, top of the hour here in New York. And Mark Berman from the Programming Insider discusses NBC's Olympics coverage and more after these news notes. A Hockey World set comedy series will come to Hulu this spring. Shorsky is that series, based on a supporting character from the long-running Canadian sitcom Letterkenny. Jared Kiso will play the title role, who joins the senior AAA hockey team. 6 half-hour episodes will play on Hulu this spring, with Kiso as head writer. Canadian cable channel Crave will present each episode in English and French. True TV will spend some of the summer playing 101 Places, that's 101 Places, to Party Before You Die. Real-life best friends Adam Pally and John Gabris set off for a variety of destinations from Maui to Puerto Rico, spending a 3-day weekend in each location. True TV series was inspired by a best-selling 101 Places. Now quickies, John Stewart's Apple TV Plus series, The Problem, returns for a new round of weekly episodes March 3rd. A double dip of TBS tidbits, scripted comedy Chad comes back for its second season April 11th, while Dwayne Wade-hosted game show The Cube is to go for season 2 later this year. This Is Us and Queen Sugar executive producer, writer, and director Kay Agian is putting together a series pilot for ABC. Premise? 5 Philadelphia-based therapists grapple with themselves and their clients. No title yet. Raven's Home, starring Raven Simone, reaches 5th Disney Channel season March 11th. The original series, That's So Raven, only lasted 4 seasons on that channel. And A&E Networks will be back early March with an in-person presentation in New York for advertisers and press. That is news notes for today. Now joining me live here in New York, the editor-in-chief of the popular newsletter and email document, The Programming Insider, our very good friend, Mark Berman. Mark, welcome in.
Thank you very much, Simon. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. Okay, Mark, you've got the floor. What's your take on NBC Universal's Olympic coverage, and why is it having rating problems?
Well, in terms of the ratings, it's an absolute bust. It is, I don't have any other word I could use but a bust. No matter how they try to spin this, no matter how they're going to be adding streaming, they're going to be adding this, they're going to say this, they're going to say that. This is by far the lowest rated Olympics telecast, whether it's winter or summer. I mean, here was the bottom line, Simon. First of all, I don't think there was any anticipation for this. I don't think there was any buildup. I just don't think people really cared about it. It just didn't really matter. And, you know, it just didn't feel the same this time. You don't have as many people there, you know, cheering, you know, the people competing on. It just feels different. It feels uneventful. And it's a complete bust. It's alarmingly bad.
Mark, by this time, we would get the ratings, the viewership for the Super Bowl from Nielsen, at least the first estimate. We have not gotten it as we went on the air at the top of the hour. And you confirmed that. What, do you have any idea why? Why we have not seen any ratings yet for both the Super Bowl and for last night's coverage, which NBC Universal was so high on in terms of trying to boost the audience?
I'll tell you exactly why. You know, we're in a business now. This is a business where linear viewerships, it's shifting from linear to streaming. That's not to say that linear is going away, because it's going away. It won't go away today. It won't go away next year. It's here to stay, but it's changing. And by changing, I mean that the audience, the traditional Nielsen ratings, are really deteriorating across the board. So what's happening is the broadcast networks don't want you to see their numbers. They don't want people like myself, like you, or like anyone in the press in particular to see their ratings, because they are down everywhere. So you just don't see numbers like you used to. And I remember sitting here on an average day where every network would be sending this, sending that, doing this, doing that. You barely get any ratings anymore. And when there was a live event like the Super Bowl or the Olympics or anything, the NBA, they're always delayed because the networks are busy thinking of how they're going to make this sound better. And so you just don't see it anymore. And the broadcast networks, you know, the way the business used to work, Simon, we would get the overnight ratings at about, I guess, between 8 and 9 a.m. And the overnight ratings were in like 50-some-odd markets across the country. Then the networks decided we don't want that put out anymore. They don't want us to see it. Then you have the fast affiliate ratings that come out at about 11. And that's time period based, and that's becoming an issue where they don't want anyone to see those either, particularly for a live event. So it really is a business now of secrecy. You know, the broadcast networks just do not want their numbers broadcast anymore. They don't want people to see it. So I have no idea how the Super Bowl did. I mean, look, the Super Bowl is the Super Bowl, and it's going to be an enormous number. But who's to say that's not going to be down? But I'm telling you, the Olympics, Simon, I mean, if you go back to 2018, that was already a record low, and that was averaging about 19 million viewers per telecast. We're about half of that here, if not less. So it's really alarming. But a long-winded answer. The broadcast networks don't want us to see their ratings.
And by the way, the ratings for the NBC coverage on NBC broadcast alone, that's for Friday and Saturday night, were around the same, 7.2 million, which was a historic low. And by the way, JMR78 just joined us in the chat room. If you have a question or comment for Mark, or you want to put your own thoughts down about the Olympic situation, put him in the chat room, make a call, 646-652-2906, United with us. Mark, on this program a week ago, I did an extended commentary about why NBC Universal is in the situation it's in. A lot of it is not their doing. It's the International Olympic Committee making the call to go from an every 4-year event, winter and summer in the same calendar year, to a winter or summer games every 2 years. I thought it took the magic out of the Olympics, what made it so special. Then it was the whole idea of putting on events before the opening ceremony. That's like doing the first quarter of the Super Bowl, and then you do the coin toss and everything else, that you do with the Open National Anthem and everything else. Then there's also the fact that sports media does not cover Olympic events the way they used to. It's like off the radar screen, no matter how the sports media goes, plus the fact that we are now in an era where you have mega content services that are not playing dead when it comes to competing against NBC Universal and their Olympic coverage. But what has really been surprising to me since last Monday, Mark, is I just sense a lack of promotion of day and date all over the place. I'm not seeing any promos like tonight on NBC, watch this, or tonight on CNBC, watch that, or tonight on USA, watch this.
Right.
It's like CNBC is running more promos for the news with Shepard Smith that night at 7 o'clock Eastern time than they are for the Olympics.
I totally agree with you. Listen, I sat here a few days before the Olympics started, and I work in the business. This is what I do for a living. This is what you do for a living. I didn't even remember what was coming up. I was like, oh, the Olympics is in 3 days. I saw no promotion. I didn't see anything. There was no, you know, normally there's excitement building, anticipation. You know, and it's the same way, Simon, with like the live award shows now, like the Oscars, the Emmys, the, you know, you didn't even have the Golden Globes on NBC this time. So, you know, I remember sitting here and anxiously waiting for these big events. And it just doesn't feel the same anymore. It's just not the same. And you are completely right. There was such a lack of promotion. It was alarming. It didn't make any sense. In some ways, I feel like they were hiding it. And when you say, you know, a 7.2 million viewers for an Olympics telecast, I remember the days of sitting here and crunching numbers that were 20 million, 25 million, 26 million, and above. And this is like, and here's what's very scary about it, Simon. You know, listen, if you're NBC, you're busy right now thinking of ways how we can make this sound better. You know, they could easily say that 7.2 million viewers on a Friday night is the highest rated Friday night all season or since whenever. Put it all in perspective. If you're an advertiser, you're not going to necessarily jump on the bandwagon and want to sponsor the next telecast, whether it's the Summer Olympics or the Winter Olympics. And that's going to be very costly to anyone that's going to be running the Olympics. I mean, they're going to be having make goods, endless make goods after this is over. Because based on what you're spending for a spot to run on a show that's getting less than half the audience it did last time, that's a problem, you know?
Yeah. It just seems, Mark, that NBC Universal, I hate to use this word, and I'm going to use it deliberately, it's sabotaging their own product. I mean, here is Molly Solomon, the executive producer of NBC's Olympic coverage, who I thought was done a yeoman job. The fact that they've had to do two Olympics within 7 months of each other, Tokyo last summer, then Beijing right now, with all the coronavirus situations, with the fact that these games, you can make the argument they should have been yanked out by the International Olympic Committee from Beijing and postponed for another 2 years because of the Chinese government and what they're all about. And we could do a whole, you know, thing about that. But the thing is that the coverage has been, whatever I've seen the coverage, it's been spectacular. It's been very well done when you consider what Molly's doing with her production team. It's extraordinary. And it's like there's no promotion. It's crazy.
None.
You know, it's like, and USA Network, for example, last night, a lot of people did not know this. While the Super Bowl was on, USA Network was doing live Olympic coverage from Beijing, figure skating and other things. And there was no promotion of it. And I saw the Super Bowl game on NBC from start to finish. There was not one reference at all by Al Michaels, by Chris Collinsworth, by Michelle, by somebody, even Mike Tirico, that, hey, if you wanted to watch the Olympics, you could go to USA Network and watch it. What was going, you know, again, it's like, it just sounds like they were self-sabotaging.
I completely agree. And then if you, listen, if you want to, you know, look, the business of promotion has changed. You know, back in the old days, or even not that long ago, you know, for a television event, TV Guide came out and there were ads plastered all over the place. Or you pick up your newspaper, there would be a big ad. There would be this, that. That doesn't exist anymore. So, you know, now we rely on social media. There was no social media buildup for this. There was nothing. I mean, if there was anything, it was very little because I basically saw nothing. Nobody was talking about it. Nobody was really writing about it. It was sort of like it was coming. And in some ways, it feels like they're self-sabotaging the whole thing. But, you know, and then look, and you have to look at it also. If you're sitting in NBC shoes, you know darn well that the results for this Olympics is going to be way below, you know, it was last time. But that doesn't mean that you don't promote it. That doesn't mean you don't really try to, like, build it up and do this. And it is as flat as a pancake. And this is alarming. This is very alarming for our business, for the sports world. And no matter how they try to spin this, and they're going to be, you know, the wheels are turning. They're thinking of ways that they're going to make it sound much better. No, you can't. You cannot hide the fact that this is probably the biggest failure easily of this season. Easily.
We are talking about NBC Universal's coverage of these Winter Olympic Games, which look like they are the lowest rated in the history of television, and it may go down even further because if you know what's been going on in recent Olympic Games, the final week of the Olympics, the ratings do tumble. We're talking with Mark Berman. He is the editor-in-chief of the popular Plumbing Insider. He's one of our favorite guests covering the world of television, and he's with us live this half hour from New York here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon, I'm with you live from New York. We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have another great hour coming your way Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised. From the new Apple TV Plus series, Suspicion, we'll go live to England and hear executive producer and showrunner Rob Williams. And then Crackle's got a brand new series that may be one of the most unique Black History Month attractions of this month. It's called Inside the Black Box. It starts later this week. We will have, from off camera, the creators and executive producers, Rachel Weintraub and David Cohen, and we'll also have live with us the co-host, the celebrated acting coach, Tracy Moore, and one of my favorite actors on television. You know him from his work on Scandal, on Eureka, on God, Friend of Me, and currently in the Fox series Our Kind of People, the Emmy Award winner, Joe Morton. They will all be with us live Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And we'll have three episodes coming your way next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday at this hour. On Tuesday, the telehealth on television revolution continues with a brand-new project called Maya MD. It's going to be on LG Smart TV sets, and we'll have the people behind that project. They'll be with us on our Tuesday episode, so be with us. It's going to really be amazing. Mark, what going forward, what can NBC Universal do, if anything, to get at least some of the viewing back?
Promote. They've got to build this up like there's no tomorrow. They've got to use every necessary tool that they have. They've got to get the people on the Today Show talking, on nightly news, in late night. They've got to run ads everywhere. You know, they were really heavily promoting Peacock. You know, the issue with NBC right now is Peacock doesn't have a hit show. Unlike HBO Max that's been, you know, pumping them out, you know, right after, you know, left and right, Peacock has not found a hit show yet, and they're spending a lot of money on this, and that's where they're putting all their, you know, dollars and all their focus. So I think the way to kind of fight this for anyone, whether it's the Olympics or it's anything, you've got to promote this thing like crazy. You've got to build buzz. You've got to get, like, you know, the participating Olympians, get them on the Tonight Show, get them on any talk show, you know, start, you know, putting them all over the place, you know, build it up, build anticipation, and use whatever resources you have. They didn't do any of that. And the key for something to get, you know, attention is you've got to get it out on social media. You've got to figure out a way to get, you know, get that message, that promotion out there. And they didn't do that. So really, really, Simon, it's always about, you know, there's a couple of things when, you know, for a show to succeed or an event. You know, if it's a scripted series, it's got to be about the content. It's got to be something that people want to watch, that they're going to be invested in. And the way to get them to do that is promote it and get people to start talking about it. If it's an event like the Winter Olympics, you've got to, you know, way before the event, start building promotion, start working on that, and really using everything you have. And they didn't do any of that, which, again, is so strange. It's so strange. It really makes absolutely no sense. And
incidentally, Mark, a lot of people over the weekend when Bel Air premiered yesterday, a lot of critics said this show may be the breakout hit that Peacock's been looking for. And by the way, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have the executive producers and showrunners, TJ Brady and Rasheed Newsom. They're going to be joining us live from the set of the show where they're getting ready to film some of the final scenes from the final episode coming later this spring on Peacock. So stay tuned for that. And in fact, Mark, I think Peacock is the key here. I think there's a number of things they can do immediately. Number one, they've got to, starting with the next Olympics, make Peacock available to all their subscribers, not just premium. Secondly, they've got to bring Olympic Channel on as a full-time attraction, the same way that they brought WWE Network on. And look what happened with WWE events like WrestleMania and so forth because they did that. Olympic Channel, which was started like 4 or 5 years ago, it has been a bust. The cable operators don't care about it. It's not getting attention. I think it would get attention if it was a 24/7 attraction on Olympic Channel, including running the live U.S. Olympic trials and the key international Olympic qualifying events on Peacock first and live. I think that would be a way to do it. I also think that Peacock has got to become more interactive with the coverage. Get the audience more involved. Give them the opportunity, for example, maybe on some events in future Olympics, give them the camera angles to work with the play director. Have them do video chats with athletes and their families. Have them address the, you know, arrange the program by any way they want, which is by nation, by sport, by athlete. I think Peacock could be a major player in interactive television, and the Olympics could be a fantastic way to do it. So that's at least some of my – what do you think about that?
Well, I want to go back a second. I agree with all of that. I think everything you're saying makes a lot of sense. But let me tell you something Peacock just did that I think is very, very good, and you mentioned it, Bel Air. Here's what they did that I think is really very smart. They wanted to do a new version of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but they didn't do a comedy. They didn't do it the way they did it the first time. They took a concept that was successful for them way back when, and they decided, let's reinvent it. Let's do it differently. Let's do it as a drama. Let's do it as an hour. Let's, you know, let's try something different. Very smart thing to do, because you don't want to keep copying past successes. If you want to take something that already worked, do it differently. And I think that's a very smart maneuver. And if it's getting attention, and I believe it is, good for them, because this is what you need to do. This is what these content, you know, these streamers, the networks, you have to think out of the box. You have to be creative. You have to take risks. And that's what they did with this. Very smart. Because if they did it as a sitcom, where, let's say, for example, Will Smith has a son now, and he's in Beverly Hills, and it's the new Fresh Prince, I would have been rolling my eyes in disgust, thinking, you know, are you kidding me? But this was very smart, and this is how you have to do it. And for anything you're going to do, you've got to take creative risks, and you have to do it wisely. And they absolutely did it this time. So congratulations to them, and I really hope this is a hit for them. And, you know, that also brings up the question, Simon, when you talk about a hit show on a streamer. The thing is, we don't even know what the data is. We don't see it. It's all speculation. We don't even know. I mean, I guess the biggest benchmark to, you know, call a streaming show a hit is if it's resonating in social media. People are talking about it. But I think right now Peacock is, we're not going to see the numbers. We're not going to know. But I think it's off to a good start, and good for them.
Yeah, and also the other thing about Peacock, too, is it is a wonderful advertiser experience, because the ad load is less than what it is on broadcast and cable television. People seem to like, from what I hear, like the commercials. They can do things like interactive commercials, as well as the ability to buy products and services while you watch the shows. And you can also do pause ads, binge, all sorts of things like that. So Peacock, along with the other ad-supported mega content services like HBO Max, Paramount Plus, et cetera, could really, I think, form a whole new advertiser directive here. And, by the way, it'd be very interesting to see what happens with the upfront new fronts, how much interactive advertising and commerce gets into it. So Peacock, think about that. And no matter what, by the way, I do want to say this. I think Molly Solomon and her production team, with all the craziness they've had to deal with, I think has done a magnificent job with these Olympics. The physical coverage of the games has been terrific. I love the biathlon coverage. I love cross-country skiing. The speed skating coverage, the wonderful use of cameras that track the athletes, like on a railroad track, is terrific with cameras there. And I also think that the play-by-play and the commentators have done a wonderful job. They've been very fair to all the athletes. They're very enthusiastic. It's not jingoistic. And they're doing it, by the way, from a monitor in Stamford, Connecticut. They're not on site, which is really makes it even more extraordinary. Mark, in the time we have left,
I
want to cover some other topics. One is, it's been a very interesting year for broadcast television. Speaking of creativity, people are taking risks. CBS's Ghost is one of the hits of the season, and ABC has been doing some wonderful work with the Wonder Years reboot, with Abbott Elementary, which I think is one of the best new shows of the year so far, and Judge Steve Harvey. And it just seems that the creativity, to some degree, is coming back.
I agree with you on that. Let me tell you. You know, a Ghost on CBS. Look, if you think of CBS and you think of sitcoms, you think of Chuck Lorre. So you think of all the Chuck Lorre shows, and there's a mountain of them, and it's the same formula with every one. So when they announced Ghosts, I thought, okay, let's see what happens. And it's different. I mean, you know, in terms of, you know, a hit show, it's not exactly bringing in 20 million viewers, but, you know, in today's fragmented, environment, for CBS, it's doing well. So, yes, I absolutely give them credit. I don't know what took the broadcast network so long to take the core formula and do it in prime time. I think ABC was very smart to put Steve Harvey on, and they do it more as a comedy than a court show. I mean, it's set in a courtroom, and he's not a real judge, and he even says, I'm not a real judge, and he's having fun with it. It's funny. I love it, and I think Abbott Elementary is a really well-done show. If you like The Office, you've got to check out Abbott Elementary, but the thing about it is it's not a copycat. You know, it's set in a school, and I think it's very clever. It's not exactly getting high numbers. It's getting very low numbers. But I think in today's world, you have to be patient. You got to give it time. And I think they definitely have something there. So, yes, I think the broadcast networks are taking some chances. They are trying different things. And in the way the world works now in media, because there's so many options, is the days of a show that's going to bring in, you know, a truckload of viewers, it doesn't exist anymore. You know, it just doesn't exist. So I am seeing, I'm agreeing totally. I give them credit. I mean, CBS is real. And that's interesting. Let me just say, Simon, talk about promotion. CBS has done an excellent job promoting this thing to Wazoo. I mean, every time you blink an eye, there's a spot for ghosts. And people are writing about it. People are talking about it. They did a really good job with that. They really did. That's how you have to do it. So good for
and
them.
Also, Mark, they are embracing the ability to see it either at the same time or the next day on a mega content service. Disney with Hulu or Disney Plus, ABC with Disney Plus or Hulu, Fox with Tubi, their multi-channel bundle, NBC with Peacock, CBS with Paramount Plus. There seems to be more, I think, effort to try to bring people together and find one winner. They're embracing the mega content era, not denying it or trying to, saying it's like off our radar screen, forget about it. So it's a very interesting thing. And by the way, I want to give Fox credit for shows like Our Kind of People or the Big Leap, the dance show, the dance drama, the reality show drama they're doing, NBC with Ordinary Joe or La Brea, whatever you think. Those shows at least it's some creativity. And by the way, speaking of NBC, what are your thoughts about Law & Order coming back after 10 years after season 20?
Well, it's no surprise. I mean, it's never really gone away. I mean, the parent series went away, but SVU is in season 23, I believe, and there's all these other shows. So it's never gone away. It makes sense. You know, look, if something works and it's reliable, you know, it's like an old shoe. It's an old shoe. You understand the formula, and people are comfortable watching it. You know, Law & Order, those shows tend to skew older. Nothing wrong with that. Older people tend to have money to spend. So it makes perfect sense. You know, look, programming is a combination of many things. Every show can't be like Ghosts. It can't be completely different, completely unfamiliar. And, you know, you have to have a combination of shows that people are going to feel like, oh, I know this type of show. So, yeah, it makes perfect sense to bring back Law & Order. Look, CBS brought back CSI. It didn't exactly, you know, take off. They're doing a second season of it. NCIS had another new show this year. And, you know, so television is a combination of the familiar and something that, you know, that's really a creative, something different. So it makes perfect sense to me. It makes sense.
Yeah, me too. I'm happy it's back. It should have been back a long time ago, and I think they've hired some wonderful new people like Jeffrey Donovan. I think people know Jeffrey Donovan, Burn Notes on USA. I think they'd be very surprised to see how he tackles this role. And Karen Manheim and Hugh Dancy, some very nice, and Sam Worthington back too. Who I met, by the way, when season 20 was starting. At Chelsea Piers, where NBC has continued to tape to film their shows, SVU and now New Law. It's coming up, by the way, next week, incidentally, I believe February 24th is the premiere date. Before you go, Mark, let's trade some thoughts about the Super Bowl commercials last night. Your pick for the best commercial.
Oh, hands down, The Sopranos. The Sopranos. I was very touched by it. I really was. What about you? Loved it.
I would say that, but I thought for me, the Amazon promo for Lord of the Rings, I thought that was really terrific. And maybe want to watch that show when it comes out in September. And the worst commercial.
Oh, my goodness, the worst commercial. What did I think the worst commercial was? Well, you go first because I'm trying to think of which I thought was the worst Super Bowl commercial. What did you think?
The Kia electric car animal, done to a great pop song. It was incredibly stupid. Who knew what the heck they were trying to do? The animal was terribly designed. It was one for the scrap heap. Really bad. And
well,
very surprising
what?
Given Kia usually makes classy commercials.
Really? I actually liked it. I'll tell you which one I'm thinking about, which one annoyed, you know, I don't know if it was necessarily the worst, but it annoyed me the most. And that was the one with Larry David. That bugged me. And, well, you know what? When I watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, I get annoyed because he's annoying. And I don't say that in a bad way. That's who he is. That's what he plays. I just felt he just looked like a fool, I thought. And I didn't, and, you know, when I think of that, well, what was it the commercial even for? I don't even know. It's sort of like, what was it? What was he doing? So I have to say that one really bugged me to no end. But
yeah, that was one of the crypto commercials, and yeah, that was my second pick for worst commercial.
A lot of people like it.
It's amazing. The crypto commercial, electric car commercial, got a lot of attention on some of the various what they call the audience meters.
But what the hell is he advertising crypto? I mean, it made no sense. I mean, listen, I guess the thought process was, let's do Larry David could do this so people could say, why was he doing this crypto commercial? And that means people are talking about it and it's getting noticed. Okay, makes sense. But what the heck was he doing that commercial for? But you know what? They got exactly what they wanted out of it. People are talking about it. So, but it really bothered me. But again, the way they did the Sopranos, you know, with the two, you know, with the two actors that played Tony Soprano's children, and the way that they had a reunion at the end of the commercial, they were hugging each other. I loved it. I thought it was really well done, and it told a nice story in, like, you know, in how many seconds. Really well done.
Yeah, agree with you. Lovely, lovely spot. One of the best, for sure. If you want to catch Mark Berman's work, programminginsider.com. He comes out with a daily email newsletter. He comes out with all sorts of great stuff. And you will definitely get the great insider knowledge about what's going on in television from that man, Mr. B. Mark, thank you again for coming on. It's always a pleasure. Let's do this again soon.
My pleasure. Have a good day. Take care, Simon.
You too, and a great Valentine's Day to you and your family.
Thank you. Same to you. Take care now.
Mark Berman for the Programming Insider joining me here in New York. When we come back, we go live to the set of Bel Air with its executive producers and co-showrunners TJ Brady and Rasheed Newsome. We did left as we paused at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com, together reaching nearly 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out the Joy Key Show. Joy is back on BTR this Thursday, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Joy Keys, back to BTR. Check it out. And don't forget, that's the BTR 24/7. At YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of this commercial-free edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, brought to you commercial-free by Audible.com. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from Milwaukee, New York. Request your comment for upcoming guests. Give a call, 646-652-2906. We're using our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, already in the room. And now joining us live from the set of Bel Air, which premiered yesterday on Peacock and got great, both critical and public love, executive producers and co-showrunners and inter-radio exclusive, TJ Brady and Rasheed Newsome. TJ and Rasheed, congratulations. Welcome aboard.
Thank you so much.
Glad
for having
here.
Us.
It is a pleasure to have you. TJ, what's been the reaction in the 24 hours since the show premiered?
It's been a whirlwind. I mean, we've gotten a lot of positive feedback on social media. You know, more anecdotally, I've had more family and friends and second cousins and people I went to high school with and haven't heard from in 30 years reach out and say, I saw the show, it's great, great job. So that means a lot. I'm really happy the show's out there and finding its way to the audience.
Mm-hmm. And Rasheed, I know Dominic Pan from Deadline Hollywood Daily before the weekend in his regular feature, The Shows You Have to Watch This Week, said that you might have the breakout hit that Peacock has been looking for in nearly 2 years.
We hope so. I mean, that's been the ambition. I mean, you know, we wanted to put a good show on, but we also wanted to help define Peacock. Everybody hoped that the show would break that wide, and it's been good to see people sort of embracing it. One of the funny things I love about all the reviews and the positive sort of reaction we're getting is people are pretty much saying, we weren't sure about this show. We weren't sure you were going to nail it, but boy, this is good.
Mm-hmm. TJ, for you, Rasheed, and for Morgan Cooper, who put the show together, I came out of his viral video sometime back. What was the most important thing you wanted to do with Bel Air?
I mean, the most important thing was to establish a show that could stand on its own two feet, even though it's reimagining a classic beloved show from the 90s. If we were to just come out and try and imitate that, that's a recipe for failure, and I don't think we could have done as good as the original. So is to create a show that could stand on its own two feet, even if you had never heard of the original. That, to me, was what was most important.
And alongside that, we needed to build a show that actually had something to say. It couldn't just exist because it was a clever idea. You know, we this family and this series had to have sort of a mission of its own.
Mm-hmm. But, and by the way, Rasheed, when Morgan talked about this in a press release by Peacock, he said that he wanted to have this be a random conversation, but also to have it be something that challenges perspectives and has tough conversations. What kind of tough conversations are we talking about?
Mostly, I mean, I think when it comes to, you know, everything from race and class and money, but the one that I think has been the strongest is sort of this generational divide of what is success. You see that in the characters like Carlton, Will, and Hillary versus the success their parents want for them. I think we've tapped into something that breaks wider when you talk about generation gaps.
Mm-hmm. TJ, for all everybody involved, what was top of mind in terms of getting this show together where you could have the chemistry you wanted, you had the will you wanted, Jabari Banks, you also had the spirit of the writing that you wanted, writing that was, you know, reverent to the original series, but also was able to expand the program in all sorts of ways, not just length of time or length of location or sensibility, but the whole environment that we're dealing with today.
Yeah, I mean, we had to build out each character, make them three-dimensional, and give them wants, needs, desires, and flaws in order to generate stories and attract the kind of talented cast that we were able to attract. I feel like, you know, there's a version of the show that could have just been a single character and seeing it through Will's eyes, but what generates story is giving everybody these wants, needs, and desires, and often those things conflict with one another, and neither character is wrong. They're just in conflict. Those objectives are in conflict, which gives us drama, which gives us stories, which gives us episodes and seasons, and so I think that was the key, is building out every single character on the board and giving them dimension and depth. And once you have that, it's easier to write. It's easier for the actors to act and to really sink their teeth into something. And all of those things, I think, came together in a way, you know, the alchemy of it just worked out for us really well. I'm very proud of the casting of the show and the actors we have and the performances they're giving. So I think that right there is the key.
Yeah. Rasheed, one of the things that people are talking about on social media is the relationship in this series of Will's character that Jabari Banks plays and Carlton's character, played here by Oli Shalotin. It's certainly not anywhere near the relationship that Will Smith had with Alfonso Ribeiro in terms of bringing out their characters.
No, well, one is we could, you know, you look at that original series, we could never duplicate that. And also for a comedy, the Carlton in the original series was sort of the butt of the jokes for Will. He was more of a comedic foil, and he could just be ridiculous as a character. Whereas here, we needed these two to actually, you know, seem like grounded human beings. And there was something sort of like a great clash to be had behind them, between them. When we talked into the room, one of the first sort of great discoveries we made when we looked at this was Will arrives, and Carlton is the Prince of Bel-Air when he arrives. And Will doesn't mean to, but he dethrones Carlton. He takes his place in the social structure. He takes his, you know, one of his love interests. He takes the attention of his parents. And so in order to sort of milk that, to make the most of that clash, we had to build Carlton up. He needed to be someone who was popular in his own right and powerful in his own right. And at least I think as we start, it gives us a great starting part for that relationship that these two are locking horns.
Mm. TJ, what kind of input did Will Smith have? What suggestions did he make that guided both of you and Morgan and everybody else?
I mean, right from the get-go, Will saw Morgan's trailer online. They flew him out. They had a meeting. Will decided they wanted to do this. Will put his stamp of approval and endorsement on the concept, the vision, the tone, and feel of Morgan's trailer, and that kind of stamp and the enthusiasm behind it allowed us to make the show we wanted to make. A lot of shows spend a lot of time trying to figure out what is our tone, what's the mood going to be, how are we going to attack certain things. That had been decided for us because Morgan's trailer existed and Will endorsed it so strongly, and so that put us ahead of the game. And then once it came to casting, you know, Will definitely had something to say about who was going to step into the character that bears his name and you know, gets the torch passed to them and takes this reimagining, you know, from the original sitcom into the future. And so he had a big impact and say when it came to that, and we were very appreciative that he did.
Rashid, how much of the storyline of the character arcs, what makes up these characters, how much of it is based on your upbringing, TJ's upbringing, Morgan's upbringing, everybody's upbringing, whether it's in Los Angeles or Philadelphia?
I mean, a lot of it. I mean, mostly what happens in a writer's room is we sit around, we waste a lot of time cracking jokes, and then we mine material from our lives. And we have, you know, you see conflicts in the show that mirror conflicts people had with their own parents, with their own spouse. It's why the details are so sharp. It's why the references can be so specific, because in some sense it's happened before. And of course we work on it to make it more TV friendly, but a lot of this came from people's lives. And I think that also shines through. I think people put a lot of heart and soul into the show, and I think the audience can feel that.
You know, for both of you and for Morgan, you all had to work with a lot of masters, if you will. You had to work with Will. You had to work with Quincy Jones. You had to work with Annie and Susie Barr, which created the original. You had Benny Medina, Malcolm Spellman. What's it like to work with all of these executive producers and trying to bring what they have to say to your table?
I mean, you definitely have to listen. You have to weigh everything that comes in against your own sensibilities and your own instincts. And then you just have to, you have to have a thick skin about it, because we would put stuff up and there'd be a lot of discussion, and you know, we're trying to say, as you said, serve all these masters, but the most important thing is serving the show and serving the vision Morgan had laid out. And because we had that North Star of the show and the trailer, you know, it wasn't like if we wanted to push back on something that we were just pulling reasons out of the air. We could point to that trailer and what it had set up and ask ourselves and ask everyone else, is what we're doing reflecting that vision? And if the answer was no, we had a pretty good case for, you know, trying to take the steps to get back to that vision. Everybody was very supportive, very collaborative. And it was, as far as things go, I think, considering all the people involved, a successful collaboration.
I also think, I mean, one of the things TJ and I have learned is that you have to take the long view on these things. We tell this to staff writers all the time. There will be an idea you may not love, and you have to have faith that through the process, because it's a long process from suggesting idea to getting it onto the show, that the right ideas will thrive, and that the ideas you don't love will sort of fade away. There are times I've seen ideas where I'm not crazy about them, and I'm just going, well, in time people will see that that's unworkable or that that isn't serving us well. And that happened here. I think we were able to collaborate with relative harmony.
Yeah. Rashid, give us the Jabari Banks story. How did he come to take on the Will role?
Well, I mean, we had the casting for this was, you know, nationwide. Hundreds, if not maybe a few thousand people felt like they auditioned. Vicki Thomas, our casting director, led that charge. And she's the one who actually flagged Jabari and said, I want you to take a look at this young man. He came in. There's several rounds for this. And he got better with every audition. I mean, you just saw him doing more and more that was sort of natural and charismatic. By the time we got to the chemistry reads where he was reading with other actors in contention for roles, he really was hands down the best. And I've told Jabari this. He's got a lot of natural talent, but he's also just got things that you can't teach. I mean, he's so good on the screen. And it was reminiscent of Will Smith, because you just watch Jabari, and there's something about him that's winsome. There's something about him that makes you want to root for him.
Bel-Air, which premiered yesterday on Peacock, the mega content service available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and depending on your area, also your local cable operator. That's the subject of this half hour here on Smart TV Televised. And we are delighted to have joining us from the Universal City set of the show, where they are taping or filming the last episode. They'll be coming on later this winter or spring. We've got executive producers and co-showrunners T.J. Brady and Rasheed Newsom, an internet radio exclusive here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon, I'm with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us. 24 degrees the top of the hour here in Nueva York, where we originate from. And if you have a question or comment for our guest, don't be shy. Make that phone work for you, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name, Rick Webb from Philadelphia is in the room as we speak. And coming up before the top of the hour, we have our classic trivia question of the week. Second week we're offering it. You can win the Concert for New Orleans DVD if you've got the correct answer and email it ASAP. More about that toward the top of the hour. TJ, does having two seasons, 2 years, that agreement from Peacock, so you can, what does that do for the production of the show? Especially now that you're in the midst of trying to do the final episode. What does it do for both you and everybody that you've got the two-year commitment? You don't have to, like, wrap everything up, let's say, in this final episode.
Yeah, no, it exactly that. It allows us to tell stories that you know, we can carry out over several episodes over these two seasons. It allowed us to come up with ideas and write from a place of confidence rather than a place of fear. Often on first-year shows, you're worried, oh, my gosh, if we don't do certain things, they won't pick us up for a second season. Well, we didn't have that fear, and that is the first time I've ever experienced that in my life. It was a very welcome feeling, and it allowed us to think of long-term story arcs when we were thinking about each of these characters in terms of where we wanted them to go over the life of the series and not feel like we had to tie everything up by episode 10 of season one, because that might be the series finale. We have the luxury of knowing we have at least 10 more, and hopefully that will reflect in you know, what you see on the screen and get people more engaged in leaning forward into a season two to want to know what happens.
Yeah, just I want to quickly add this. Normally, when you
go ahead.
Well, that normally when you do just end a season and you don't know if you're getting picked up for another one, they actually ask you to end it so that it could be the season finale or the series finale, which is such a hard line to walk to try to make it satisfying both ways. But that's typically what happens, and so luckily we're not in that position.
Mm-hmm. You know, Rasheed, going with that a little further, Morgan Cooper was saying that there were times where everything could be an inspiration. You could find something as you're shooting art or hit dance or history or whatever. That did anything come up like that where, let's say, you wanted a plot to go one way or a character, and because of something that inspired you or TJ or Morgan, you decided, let's shift the focus, let's shift the emphasis, let's concentrate on that because that's a better story?
Oh, yeah. Two things come to mind. One is we saw chemistry between two of the actors, and suddenly we thought, well, we should put them in a romance. I mean, they were just in scenes where we expected them to be comedic, but there was a spark that was very clear to everybody. And so we hadn't thought of going that way that soon, but it was undeniable. You were seeing that chemistry on screen. The other one, and just a small story note, is in the bank's house, we have a piano, and one time during the break, Jabari just went over and started playing the piano, and we didn't know he could play the piano. And the moment you saw him doing that, we both were like, oh, well, that's going in the show. And so now the character plays the piano because we learned that Jabari can.
TJ, what's it been like for Morgan to turn this viral video that went extremely viral into a regular series where he is a co-writer, he's like both of you an executive producer, and he's directing the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
How has his progress been going from a one-shot to regularly working an episodic series?
I mean, I think his progress has been great. I mean, if you look at that pilot episode and see some of the cinematic scope he has been able to bring to a television project, we've certainly benefited from it. It set the look and tone of the series, and every episodic director who followed has been challenged to live up to the standard that he set. And again, the results are reflected in what you see on the screen. I think we get really good production value, really good camera movement, really good lighting. The music and the soundtrack that he established is kind of the beating heart of these episodes in this season. And so that has been fantastic. And I think that that Mr. Morgan Cooper has a extremely bright and successful future ahead of him. I think it's only – he's already starting at a very amazing high place. And believe it or not, I think it's only up from here for Morgan.
And Rasheed, when it came to the other directors, the other writers, what were you looking? What were you both looking for in terms of people you wanted in that writers' room, or people to take the mantle from Morgan in that first episode and advance the story, advance the characters?
Well, one of the prerequisites that we—I don't think we consciously knew we were looking for, but helped us a lot—is that everybody who came to the show was a fan of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, because it meant that they already spoke the language in a way. They were already plugged into who these characters were, who they were inspired by, so we could go from there. So for the writers, it was interesting to have people who already were steeped in that history and, of course, were willing to come in and share their own ideas to sort of press it forward. With directors, what we looked for were people who were already naturally directing in the vein of Morgan. Morgan's not someone who just sort of keeps the camera steady or put it on a dolly. He's a lot of handheld shots, a lot of oners. He likes a lot of sort of kinetic movement. So we tried to get directors who already had that in their repertoire so that when they came here, there wasn't that big a learning curve. But, I mean, as TJ mentioned, Morgan was around the whole season. So before every director started shooting, they'd have a directing tone meeting with Morgan so he could sort of like impart how he does certain things and how he would tackle some of the scenes.
As you know, as our listeners know, we're talking to both of you on the set of Bel-Air at Universal City in Hollywood, where you're now working on the final episode. What's it been like on the set today with everybody, cast and crew, knowing that maybe there's like a sigh of relief because now people can see what you've done. People now can see the first episodes. People now, it's no longer like, wait till Super Bowl Sunday. Now you're on the air. Mm-hmm. Now people can get you. Now people can see it. What's it been like on the set today with that? Has that thought permeated a lot of people? What are people saying about the fact that you're on at last?
A lot of pride, a lot of gratitude, a lot of shared stories of crew members watching it with their spouses, with their families, and the reactions that they have and how gratifying that was. And, you know, A film crew, a crew that makes a TV show, after a while it becomes a family. We're all here 12 to 14 hours a day. You see these individuals more than you see your family most of the time. So the bonds are very strong. The emotions are very deep, and the connections are also strong. And so to be able to share that not just with ourselves, but with our loved ones and the public at large, it's an amazing thing. Everybody came out here to get into this business, and everybody is living their dream. And so to be able to share that dream with the world and with their loved ones is an amazing thing, and that has been reflected today.
Mm-hmm. Rasheed, anything you want to add?
I want to hit there is also a great deal of relief. There's a lot of joy, but a lot of relief. You just never know. We felt we were working on something special. We thought we were building something that people would really love, but you don't know until the audience gets to decide. It's been wonderful, at least in the last 24 hours or so, to see that the audience feels the same way about this show that we do.
The first few episodes of Bel-Air are now available on Peacock, the mega content service you can find on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices and in many areas around the country through your local cable operator. For more details about the program and the service online, go to www.peacocktv.com. That's www.peacocktv.com. And don't forget, coverage continues of the Winter Olympics live from Beijing and on tape as well on Peacock as well. Again, for all details, www.peacocktv.com. And the best news is, Bel-Air has a two, that's right, two season commitment. So more episodes to come beyond this year. TJ Brady, Rasheed Newsome, thank you both very much for coming on, taking the time from doing your final episode to be with us this half hour. It's been a great pleasure all the way. Congratulations and all the very best. And hopefully what's going on this year is the beginning of a great, great long run.
Thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome, TJ and Rasheed. Take care. All the greatest.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
TJ Brady and Rasheed Newsome joining us live from the set of Bel-Air at Universal City in Hollywood. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. Second week we're offering the question. As your first correct answer, you will win the Concert for New Orleans DVD with great performances by Lenny Kravitz, Elton John, Diana Krall, Dave Matthews, the Neville Brothers, and so many more. Here's the question. Name the theme song of the long-running ABC series Family Matters. That's the one with Steve Urkel and crew. Name the theme song of the long-running ABC sitcom Family Matters. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. So if you're getting close to your name and your mailing address, if you're first to correct answer, you will win the Concert for New Orleans DVD, which, by the way, benefited the victims of Hurricane Katrina in that wonderful city. And if we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning first thing on Facebook and on Twitter. Look at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in, so do so, and all the very best. Finally, if you caught a copy of USA Today this morning, you may have seen a very interesting ad in the Money Plus Life section. It was an ad for Media Village, the online media leadership destination founded by Jack Myers that yours truly writes the Marvin Televised column with, and also does coverage of the upcoming upfronts and new fronts. It was wonderful to see a very big Valentine's Day surprise. It's the first time that we've ever had a newspaper ad for Media Village in. So congratulations to Jack Myers. And the great thing is, by the way, it was all about discovering the wonderful, outstanding journalists and columnists who do work on that wonderful online site, including yours truly, people like Ed Martin, Janice Filson, Jacqueline Cutter, Juan Ayala, Jeff Minsky, some of them who have been on this program over the years. So thank you, Jack. Thank you, everybody in Media Village. Thank you, USA Today, for highlighting what Media Village does and does so well. Again, if you want to catch all the wonderful stuff at MediaVillage.com, including yours truly's columns and some of our Tomorrow Be Televised episodes as well, www.MediaVillage.com, www.MediaVillage.com. Great reading any time of the day. Thank you to all of our guests for being here and all of you for tuning in. Don't forget, we're back on Friday. Joining us live from England will be from the new Apple TV Plus series, Suspicion, executive producer and showrunner Rob Williams, and from the new Crackle series that premieres later this week, Inside the Black Box, creator and executive producers Rachel Weintraub and David Cohen, and co-host Tracy Moore and Emmy winner Joe Morton. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up an episode of Miss, go to the homepage, logtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast on the iRadio Podcast Network and other places. Love to hear from you. What's your thoughts on where TV is at and where it's going? How would you deal with NBC Universal's Olympic woes? So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. We do respond to what you have to say within 24 hours because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed of those of the participants, not those of Blog Talk Radio and other streamers of this program, NHL's Beat Charge General Manager, Jay Sonnenberg, is head of content. Website service provided by On Podium, the internet's new podcast outpost. For details, go to onpodium.com. Guitar Vegas, our web coordinator. Tomorrow we televised birthday commercial free by audible.com, the audio marketplace of amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two, go to audibletrial.com/televised. And for all details on how you can get your first 3 months of your subscription absolutely gratis, again, audibletrial.com/televised. Tomorrow we televised. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your Valentine's Day and your week. Back on Friday, if you can meet New Pacific, you know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Radio, and all of our podcast affiliates. Whatever you need now and then, make it safe and great. If you haven't been vaccinated, go see your doctor, get your medical situation checked out, including alternatives to vaccines and boosters, and then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.